It's nice to have you with me.
Well, it's good to be here.
And what does the Health Resources and Services Administration do?
It's one of the agencies of the Department of Health and Human Services, and includes a number of programs that I think at their core are all about improving access to care for vulnerable populations.
Including rural health.
Including rural health.
So $2.5 billion of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act is going to the Health Resources and Services Act Administration, excuse me. How is that money going to impact rural communities?
Well, a lot of the money is going to go towards community health centers, both for creating new community health centers and expanding the capacity of existing health centers. And more than half of the community health center sites have traditionally been in rural communities. And so they play an important role in ensuring access to care for folks, especially those who don't have insurance coverage, because health centers by statute are required to see all patients regardless of their ability to pay. So the ability to invest in and community health centers will really sort of shore up the safety net at a time when those services are sorely needed.
And that because of the economy, they're seeing quite a bit more demand for these services, these health centers.
That is what
centers.
We're hearing, that newly uninsured folks are coming in and putting quite a strain on the existing health centers. And so the money couldn't have come at a better time.
Now, this is happening at a time when states are cutting health care budgets. Governor Rendell's cutting health care budgets, other states. Can these federal programs progress while there are cuts to basic health care taking place on the state level?
Well, I think it's sort of on a state-by-state basis. I think that traditionally there's been a good federal-state partnership, but everybody's a bit challenged now, and I think that folks are just going to have to work together to figure that out.
And so your administration helps rural communities to take advantage of this kind of money. How does that work?
Well, yeah, we work to make sure that rural communities are aware of the funding opportunities that are out there. In addition to the money that we've talked about in the Recovery Act, we have an ongoing budget that provides grants to rural communities. So it's not just the Recovery Act that's going to help, but a lot of the regular programs that are in the budget each year. And we have grants that are specifically dedicated that have to go to rural communities to improve access to care. And we just made 94 of those grants in the past 6 weeks.
One of the things that the Obama administration is pushing is electronic health records. And it seems like that would be especially difficult in rural communities because these are very expensive to implement and to maintain. Are rural practices going to be able to afford to implement electronic health records?
I think the hope is that they are. The one advantage rural communities often has, because they operate on a smaller scale, that sometimes they can bring about that sort of change faster. You know, if you're in a small practice with two docs, it's easier to implement an electronic health record than if it was a 20-doc practice. And so sometimes their small size plays to their favor in that regard.
But there are a lot of costs to making that transition.
There are costs, and we have grant money in the regular appropriation that can help do that, and a lot of the foundations are investing in it. So there's resources out there for rural communities to do it, and we've seen a number of rural communities actually, despite the challenges financially, find the funding to do it.
Now, today at the rural healthcare conference, someone asked about antitrust issues to do with these electronic health records. How does that come into play in electronic health records?
Well, right now there's an exception in the antitrust law that allows like a hospital system to give computer equipment to a practice, to help them get established. And I guess the concern of the questioner was, is that going to be allowed to continue or is that likely to change? I don't think anybody knows the answer. Right now, there's a nice law in place that allows that sort of collaboration to happen. But as Congress considers changes, we'll have to wait and see whether that protection remains.
So it sounds like there are a lot of details of these programs that are yet to be worked out.
Yeah, I mean, everything's really in the discussion phase at this point.
Including some the Senate Finance Committee is considering bundled payments that would focus more on the outcome. Can you explain what that means?
Well, this has been a concept that's been bouncing around for a while. The Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, which is a congressional a group that advises Congress on Medicare payment policy has been talking about this for a while. There's been a for the last 10 years, there's been a pronounced emphasis on trying to address quality issues in healthcare, and in the last year or two, we've heard a lot of discussion about whether there's ways to put incentives in the way you pay for healthcare that would promote better outcomes and would share the responsibility for those outcomes among providers. And I think at its core, that's what bundled payments are about, is you would make a payment to one organization that would then be responsible for the care regardless of what setting it took place in.
Now, is that the same as what Geisinger is doing with their Proven Care program?
I'm not sure. I think you'd have to check with them. But they have been a national leader, I think, in showing, innovative things you can do to improve outcomes. And they serve a large rural community. So it's been interesting to see what they've been able to do.
Sort of a case study?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
And are there other programs like Geisinger across the nation?
Geisinger is a rare situation. The folks that started it obviously were visionaries in terms of setting up the system in a way that provided care for an entire region. But there are several others around the country, Intermountain Health in Utah, the Marshfield Clinic in Wisconsin are other examples of broad regional systems that do a good job in terms of quality of care.
So it seems like there's a lot of distance between Washington, D.C. and these different communities. It seems like it would be very hard to work with all these different rural communities. How do you come up with a unified plan that works for all of them?
Well, part of it is you just have to make sure that you're always talking to folks and from different parts of the country and understand what their needs are. And that's why organizations like the Pennsylvania Rural Health Association, it's a great opportunity to come here and hear from folks. After the presentation today, I had three or four folks come up to me and make suggestions on things we could do to our outreach grants to make them more effective. And that's what you have to do. I think the more you can get out and listen to the real challenges, the better off you are. Washington can be a long way away if you let it.
And overall, it seems like access is the biggest issue. There's so much distance maybe between your community and the healthcare you need. How is that being addressed?
Well, there's no one solution to it. I mean, access has always been probably the primary issue facing rural communities. They often don't have enough providers to take care of the population. And you mentioned the distances, and that's a huge issue. And so you have to come up with a variety of different approaches. First, we've got to do a better job of convincing folks to go into primary care and then to practice in rural areas. And then the other thing is, utilizing technology as effectively as possible. You mentioned electronic health records. They can help in terms of coordination of care. A lot of folks also believe that telehealth, telemedicine applications can be an important tool to support rural health care. It's not a substitute, but it can improve, say, access to specialty care for isolated folks. They don't have to travel a long way to, say, see an oncologist or a cardiologist or a dermatologist, things like that.
And there are some tuition reimbursement and grant programs for doctors willing to work in those rural areas, right?
Yeah, the primary federal one is National Service Corps, which for more than 25 years, I think, has done a fantastic job of providing a combination of scholarships and loan repayment to doctors, nurse practitioners, PAs, psychologists to get them to go into underserved areas. And traditionally, about 60% of the National Service Corps placements are in rural communities. And so that's been an effective program. But a lot of states also operate their own loan repayment programs. And sometimes communities will band together and offer loan repayment out of their own pockets to get a provider to come. The one thing about rural is folks tend to be very creative because necessity is the mother of invention. And they've really taken that to heart over the years.
But even so, 55% of rural physicians are 55 or older. What's going to happen when they all retire?
That's a good question. I think that's one of the big challenges that we have facing us is where's that next generation of practitioners going to come? And, this is a shared issue of both the federal and the state level. And so, at the federal level, we need to make sure that the programs like that we have in place, like National Service Corps and Title VII of the primary care training grants are out there and doing what they're supposed to. But at the state level, they have a challenge in making sure that the medical schools that are supported by state dollars are producing the kind of clinicians that are needed in rural communities. And some states have done a fantastic job of that.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you for having me.